Chapter 15. The approach of the trolls made it impossible for anyone to leave by conventional means, which meant that everyone not charged with defending the castle had to gather in the Great Hall, or other rooms of the keep, the most defensible area. As it was dark out, Edric and I collected torches to carry up to the battlements to learn what we could. Ralph wanted to accompany us, but we convinced him that he could help more by staying behind to protect the women and children. He decided that this meant watching over Bradston and his mother, so he plopped down in front of them and growled when anyone came near. Queen Frizella nearly fainted the first time he did this, although Bradston seemed delighted with the little dragon. When they saw us going, Grisina, Haywood, and my grandmother followed us to the courtyard and up the steps to the battlements, where my father and King Bodiman were already watching the trolls. Neither of them seemed too worried at first.
"They can't do anything from there," said Bodiman as the trolls jumped up and down and shouted at us from the far side of the gap separating the ridge from Castle Peak.
While the trolls milled around, lighting torches and bumping into each other, a few of the old witches from the retirement community joined us. The witches were trying to guess what the trolls would do next when the troll queen strode down the middle of the ridge, pushing aside anyone who got in her way. Although she was shorter than most of them, she had more heads than any of the rest. Even the bigger trolls seemed to be afraid of her. When she reached the point on the ridge where the drawbridge would have landed had we set it down, she stopped and shouted with all four heads at once, "King Bodiman!" The volume was impressive, even from so far away. "That's the Troll Queen," I told him. "I think the second head from the right is in charge. Its name is Fat Lippia."
"What kind of name is that?" said the king.
Cupping his hands around his mouth, he shouted back,
"What do you want? Why are you here?"
"We want Prince!" shouted Fat Lippia.
King Bodiman's eyes went hard and his hands squeezed into fists.
"Never!" he shouted.
Turning his back on the queen, he told us,
"She's not getting Bradston back, even if she lays siege to this castle for 100 years.
"Then we come get him!"
screamed the head called Inga Binga.
"That prince ours! He promised Mary Queen!"
The troll queen turned and was storming away when the strawberry blonde head called Tizzy looked over her shoulder and stuck out her tongue.
"Marry," said King Bodiman. "I can't believe Bradston would promise to marry her."
"I don't think he did," said Edric. A new troll had arrived and was barking orders, arranging the troll army in a raggedy line. He had two heads like the one who had seemed to be in charge during their attack near the stream, the one who had held the magic-seeing ball. We were wondering what he had planned when he shouted something at the first troll in the line, gesturing from him to us. The troll balked at what must have been an order. When he didn't move, the commanding troll shouted at the second troll. The two trolls squabbled, then the second shoved the first over the edge of the causeway. The commanding troll barked his order again. Now that the second troll was at the head of the line, he didn't seem to like the order any better than the first had. Instead of waiting for the troll behind to push him, however, he shouted at his commander, then jumped as far as he could with his arms flailing as if they could carry him all the way to where we stood. They didn't, of course, and we watched as he passed out of sight, wailing the whole way down.
"What are they thinking?" my father said as the trolls continued to line up and jump.
None of the trolls was getting anywhere near us, yet that didn't seem to deter their commanding troll. One by one, they leaped and fell wailing onto the rocks below.
"Trolls don't think," said King Bodiman. "Their brains are smaller than ours."
Edric had been leaning over the edge of the battlement with a torch in his hand, trying to see farther down Castle Peak. "Emma, could you make me some witch's lights?" he asked when the torch wasn't enough. Whatever moon was out that night was hidden behind the mountain looming above us. Aside from a few twinkling stars, the only light was what we provided. After I'd made him a score of lights, he had me send some of the glowing balls down into the ravine separating Castle Peak from the ridge.
Peering over the edge again, he grunted and stepped back.
Look down there, he said, pointing. Their brains may be smaller, but some of them can think just fine.
From where we stood on the battlement, if we craned our necks just right and leaned out just so, we could see where some of the trolls had landed. Instead of splatting on the rocks, they had grabbed hold and were climbing hand over hand.
Does anyone know how they're doing that? Asked my father.
When no one could answer him, Grisina took out her far-seeing ball and asked to see one of the climbing trolls. The image in the ball was small, but it was enough to see that the troll was digging his long fingernails into the rock itself, not even bothering to look for crevices.
Wow, said Edric. If their nails are that strong, it's no wonder they're so long. They probably can't even be cut. Look at those trolls go!
Nearly a dozen trolls had climbed into view, and more appeared as we watched. I glanced at their commander and saw that he was still ordering the trolls over the edge one at a time. Some wailed, but the more resigned ones fell silently.
I know what to do, said King Bottoman, and he turned to an officer awaiting his orders.
They spoke for just a moment, then the officer strode off and the king returned to where we stood.
Now watch, he said. This should take care of them.
While some soldiers ran down a ramp, others began shooting arrows at the trolls, moving so quickly that the projectiles looked like a swarm of oversized wasps. The arrows bounced off the trolls' backs, although one went straight into the open mouth of a troll who was looking up. He bit down, then smiled, grabbed the next arrow that came near him, and devoured it, too. Within a few minutes, the first group of soldiers returned, lugging a pot of boiling oil up the ramp. Hauling it to the edge of the parapet, they poured it over the edge onto the trolls below. We could hear the oil splashing on the rocks, but none of the trolls fell, and not one made a sound when the boiling oil drenched them.
That won't do anything except clean them off and make them smell better, said my grandmother. Their skin is much thicker than ours, more hide than skin, really. It can't be cut, pierced, or burned, unless, of course, you have a magical axe made specifically to use on trolls. She glanced at King Bottoman. I don't suppose anyone here has...
When he shook his head, Grandmother sighed.
No, I didn't think so. Perhaps we could hold them off until dawn, when daylight will turn them to stone.
King Bottoman snorted.
I admit that you don't see stone trolls very often, said Grandmother. Trolls are very conscious of what their fate would be if they didn't get under cover before the sun came up. That's why they attack only at night.
This has to work, said King Bottoman.
His brow was creased and his eyes were hooded when he came back from speaking with his officer a second time. Instead of talking to us, he went to the parapet and leaned over to watch. The soldiers tried boiling oil again, sending the contents of a dozen enormous pots onto the heads of the trolls. When that didn't work, they tried pot after pot of boiling water. When they ran out of water, they poured dirty water from scrubbing the kitchen floor and the remnants of a cream-based soup that had gone bad the day before but hadn't been thrown out yet. None of this fazed the trolls, who just kept climbing higher. The king had his men try stones next. The smaller gravel sounded like rushing water when it fell, tumbling over the trolls and clearing off debris. The larger ones bounced against Castle Peak, breaking off chunks. The largest stones knocked a few trolls off the wall, but they just started climbing all over again.
There must be something you can do, King Bottoman
said to Grandmother, Grisina, Haywood, and me.
Some magic that would get rid of them. We know you can turn people into frogs. Can't you turn trolls into something equally harmless?
We could try, said Grandmother, but it wouldn't make any real difference. Our magic doesn't work on trolls the same way it does humans.
King Bottoman's face flushed red.
I know how it is. This isn't your castle, so you don't care what happens to it. You can just fly away on your broomsticks and leave us here to face them when they...
Oh, all right, said Grandmother, sounding exasperated. I'll show you what I mean. Do you see that horrid-looking fellow with the big ears? Watch what happens to him. The troll she was talking about had almost reached the base of the castle itself. He was reaching for his next fingernail hold when Grandmother cast a spell to turn him into a mouse. The troll paused for a moment, swatting the air around his head as if a swarm of flies was bothering him, then continued to climb. We all peered down at him, wondering if anything had happened. As he came closer, we saw that he had changed, but not the way the king had wanted. His ears, usually big and pointed, were now small and rounded. His face had become pointier, with a row of tiny teeth and a long, thin tail sprouted from a hole in the seat of his pants. Unfortunately, he was as big and mean and troll-like as ever.
"All right," said King Bodman. "You can't change the trolls themselves, but surely you can do something else."
"We could call up a storm," I said, "although I doubt it would do much."
"A storm? Yes, that might work," said the king. "A big, fierce storm that will blow them from here to tomorrow."
"All right," I said, "but everyone who isn't a witch has to go inside. A storm strong enough to blow trolls off the side of a mountain will most certainly be strong enough to blow you away as well." King Bodiman protested, as did Edric and my father. I relented and let them stay as long as they tied themselves down, but insisted that the soldiers leave, saying that I wouldn't begin until they did. When everyone was ready, I started the storm by myself. Then the other witches joined in, adding their strength to mine. It was impressive, with winds that sent boulders flying like specks of dust and ripped the words from our mouths before we could speak. The other witches and I used magic to keep us in place, so I was able to look over the edge to see how the storm had affected the trolls. Most of them had stopped climbing. Although the trolls' fingernails were still embedded in the rock, the rest of their bodies were flapping like clean laundry in the wind. Only the trolls who had thought quickly enough to use their toenails as well were making any headway, but slowly because they had to move one foot or hand at a time. We kept the winds blowing until it was obvious to everyone that it wasn't going to work either. Even King Bodiman admitted that we had to give up, if only so we could try something else. We couldn't think of anything else to try, however. The trolls had almost reached the top of the castle walls when my father ordered us inside. King Bodiman protested, still hoping that we could do something that would rid him of the trolls. Grisina dragged me to the steps leading down to the courtyard. I was partway down, pushed along by the press of old witches behind us, when I realized that Edric wasn't there.
"Where's Edric?" I called out. "Has anyone seen him?"
"He's back there,"
shouted a witch at the end of the line.
"I heard him talking about someone named Birdie."
"You mean Ferdie?"
I turned and squeezed past my aunt and the other witches, heading back up the stairs. If Edric was out there, he must think that his magic sword could work against trolls.
"Ferdie doesn't have the right kind of magic," I shouted, running up the last few steps.
"Shh," said Edric's father from where he stood just outside the door. "Let him see what he can do."
"But,"
I began. My father grabbed my arm and pulled me out of the way.
"If the man wants to try, why not let him?"
Edric was facing the meanest-looking, ugliest troll I'd ever seen. He was hunched back, knock-kneed, and had a nose like a potato. He also had tiny, rounded ears and sharp little teeth that... It was the troll that Grandmother had tried to change into a mouse. The troll hopped off the parapet, landing with a thunk. He didn't seem to notice that he had grown a long, thin tail until it snagged in a crack in the parapet. Edric was already pulling Ferdie from his scabbard when the troll grunted and stopped to look behind him. Seeing his tail, he grabbed it and yanked, howling when it hurt. He forgot his tail, however, when Ferdie began to sing.
"A troll, a troll, I've never fought a troll, though there's been many times that I've wanted to fight a troll that has become my goal. I'll take a couple whacks, then I'll run him through."
The troll roared, opening his mouth so wide that we could see his tiny teeth and his huge gullet. Ferdie didn't wait for him to finish. He whacked the troll just as he said he would. 1, 2, 3... Neat slits appeared in the troll's ragged clothes, but his hairy hide was unharmed underneath. However, Ferdie wasn't about to give up.
This troll is tough, his skin so thick. Defeating him won't be so quick. Give me just a minute more, and he'll be laid out on the floor.
The troll lumbered as far as his still-caught tail would let him, while Ferdy whacked away until the raggedy clothes hung in ribbons. When the troll reached for Ferdy, the sword jumped aside, then whacked the creature's hands like a teacher slapping a wayward student. The troll growled, unhurt but obviously angry.
"What still?" he bellowed. "May get you!"
Instead of going for Ferdy again, as I thought he would, the troll buffeted the sword aside and reached for Edric, wrapping his beefy hands around his neck. I shrieked, then bit my lip and thought furiously, knowing that with a twitch of his fingers the troll could snap Edric's neck in an instant. Because trolls seemed to be constantly hungry, I thought a little distraction might help. The troll's mousy tendencies gave me an idea for the spell. "Stop that troll, if you please! Hit him with a wheel of cheese!" A huge wheel of yellow cheese shot out of nowhere, thumping the troll soundly in the chest. He looked surprised, then delighted when he saw the cheese spinning on the floor where it had landed.
"Yummy!"
he bellowed. Letting go of Edric, the troll lunged after the cheese, jerking to a stop when he reached the length of his tail. While the troll struggled to free himself, I ran to Edric and grabbed him by the back of his tunic. "Come on!" I said, trying to pull him toward the steps. Coughing and rubbing his throat, Edric turned and followed me. Our fathers were already halfway down when we reached the stairs. Hearing another troll land on the floor lent us speed, and we dashed down to the courtyard, nearly stepping on the king's heels. One after the other, the trolls crawled over the parapet. As we crossed the courtyard, heading for the keep, the first trolls started down the steps behind us. Haywood was waiting for us, and the moment we crossed the threshold, he set a spell that made the door as immovable as the stone walls around it. Now nothing could open that door until he undid the spell. We were discussing what we should do next when we heard something heavy crash against the door. But it was stronger now than its original wood, and the trolls couldn't even make it rattle. "What about the other doors?" asked my father. "The witches from the retirement community are taking care of those," said Haywood.
"The trolls are climbing the walls of the keep!"
Grisina shouted from the entrance to the great hall. "They must be going for the windows," said Haywood. "We'll have to take care of those next." The arrow slits were too narrow for a troll to fit through, but the windows facing the valley were wide enough. When grandmother's friends had finished with the doors, they went from window to window, shrinking them so that even a troll's hand wouldn't have fit. Although the rest of the castle might be overrun with trolls, the keep would be impenetrable once every door and window was blocked. As soon as the witches were finished, we met in the great hall to try to come up with some way of evicting the trolls.
"We're safe enough here," said King Bottoman. "I have soldiers stationed around the keep, watching the trolls through the arrow slits. They'll keep us posted if the trolls try anything new."
"We're trapped, aren't we?" said my mother.
King Bottoman's expression was fierce.
"Only magic could get us out now."
"Has anyone seen the Troll Queen?" I asked. When no one could answer me, I took out my far-seeing ball and asked to see her. At first I couldn't figure out where she was. She was using her nails to climb up a small, narrow space. Her four heads made hideous faces as they squeezed through the opening and she climbed out into...
"That's the guard rope down the hall from my room!"
Branston shouted into my ear. I hadn't known that he was peering over my shoulder, so I jumped when he shouted, and the image in the ball disappeared. I knew the guard robe he was talking about, however. It was a tiny room that jutted out from the side of the castle like a wart on a troll's nose. The whole of the guard robe emptied into the valley, making an easy entrance for anyone who climbed the wall on that side, provided they weren't too squeamish.
"She's in the castle!"
said Queen Frizella, her voice high and shrill. Branston pointed overhead.
"She's..."
Then we all heard her, whooping and yelling as she thundered through the corridor above the great hall, growing louder as she drew closer.
Queen Frizella became so pale that I was sure she was about to faint.
"Can't someone do something?"
she whispered. The troll queen tore down the steps, her forehead screaming. Each was wild-eyed and covered with filth. A row of soldiers stood ready to defend us, forcing us to peer around them to see the queen. The closer she came, the better we could see her faces, lumpy with dried scabs left by the troll pox and colored with garish paint that highlighted her eyes and mouths. The troll queen fought the soldiers, their swords and pikes bouncing off her as she beat them back with the cudgels she held in her hands. She was almost through the line when Edric tried to pull me behind him, but I stood my ground and set a spell that would have stopped most people. I didn't know if it would hurt her, but then I didn't know if anything could. "Let the ground beneath her open to a deep and noisome pit. Put inside it snakes with venom, of the kind that bite or spit." One moment the troll queen was coming after me, the next the ground had opened under her and she disappeared. I cringed, wondering if I'd gone too far. I'd never intentionally hurt anyone before, and the thought that I had made me feel cold inside. Everyone froze, listening for some sound from the pit, afraid that they might actually hear it. After a dreadful silence, the witches began arguing about who should retrieve her body. My father suggested that I seal her in, but King Bodiman didn't want me to, saying that if the troll queen was still alive down there, she might find some way to undermine the castle foundations and kill everyone. While the two kings debated what to do, the witches prepared to draw straws to see who would go into the hole. I was watching them when Queen Frizella shrieked and pointed at the hole. The troll queen's heads had risen over the edge and she was crawling out, dragging herself by her nails. However frightening she'd looked before, it was nothing compared with how she looked now. Her filthy clothes had been torn when she'd fallen into the snake pit, and what was left of them writhed as if they'd taken on a life of their own. Bulges rippled and slid across her stomach, then over her chest and down her arm. A snake slipped out of a hole in her sleeve, its tongue flicking the air. She grabbed it just behind the head and bit it while the tail thrashed and twitched. After she'd eaten the entire snake, savoring each bite, she used her nails to dig the scales from her teeth. More soldiers had positioned themselves between the troll queen and the royal family. I'd have to do something before she hurt anyone else. But first, I needed some questions answered.
"Why do you want the prince?" I said. "Do you honestly want to marry him?"
"Prince promised to me, he mine,"
Fat Lippia said as the troll queen stopped short. Queen Frizella gasped and began to cry. "Did you promise the troll queen that you'd marry her?" King Bodiman asked his youngest son as he shook him by the shoulder. Bradston gulped and shook his head.
"I didn't promise her anything."
"Then what is she talking about?" asked the king.
"Who promised that you could marry the prince?" I called to the troll queen.
"Two humans," said Tizzy. "Young one and old one. Came through a magic mirror. Said if queen took young prince, queen have husband and human kingdom. Humans warn queen about you. Old one say you'll come if queen took prince. Gave queen two balls, show magic. Young one tell where prince hunt eggs."
"What did the humans look like?" Edric asked, pushing me to the side.
Grunella leaned toward Fat Lippia, whispering,
"That prince I tell you about."
After studying Edric a moment, Fat Lippia nodded and whispered back,
"I see what Grunella mean."
Raising her voice, she told him,
"Young one, hair color of straw and eyes like summer sky. Old one, no hair on top and big belly."
Edric glanced at me. Sounds like Jorge and Olabald.
They had no right to promise you the prince, I told her. Bradston can't go with you.
Curling her lip, Fat Lippia shook her head.
Quinn not want that one. He talk too much. Quinn want that one,
she said, pointing at Edric.
Grunella say he prince too.
Edric grunted as if he'd been hit in the stomach.
You can't have him either, I said. I just married him. He's mine now.
I could have sworn I heard Fat Lippia growl. The other heads looked at her as if they were expecting something to happen.
No human tell Quinn what can and can't do,
she said, narrowing her eyes. Raising her clubs to shoulder height, she began to twirl them like a child might twirl a length of rope. The clubs went faster and faster, making an awful whining shriek that hurt my ears. When the troll queen reached the soldiers, her clubs were an unstoppable force that cut them down like grain before a scythe. After finishing with the soldiers, the troll queen turned her eyes on me.
Kill her, Fat Lippia! If she dead, prince not belong to anyone,
called the head named Grunella. Everyone except Edric and I had fled to the back of the hall. Unlike my family's castle, however, there were no doors there to allow them to escape. The only thing behind the great hall in Upper Monte Vista was the valley and a 1,000-foot drop.
Get back!
Edric shouted at me, pulling Ferdy from his scabbard.
A troll, a troll,
the singing sword began.
No, I told him. You heard the queen. This fight is mine.
And then I did something I'd never intended to do in front of my new husband's family again. The first time I'd done it, it had made them hate me and could have ended any chance I had of marrying my one true love. Now I didn't see that I had any choice if I was to save him from the troll. Closing my eyes, I said the same spell that I'd used at the tournament and many times since. The shriek was torn from my throat as my body began to burn. I felt as though the spell was peeling off my skin and replacing my bones with lava. It was excruciating, but when it ended abruptly, I stood before the troll queen, a peridot green dragon, more than twice as long as she was tall, ready to defend all the humans in the room.
Look,
said Inga Binga.
Maybe we go home now,
said Grunella.
I not quitter,
growled Fat Lippia.
That prince mine.
Roaring her rage, she launched herself at me, her clubs moving so fast that they were hard to see. I reared up, glad that I'd eaten gunga beans and hot flammy peppers only the week before. As the troll queen twirled her clubs, I took a deep breath and exhaled, igniting her clothes, her hair, and the banners hanging on the walls behind her. The witches in the hall doused the flames and wafted the smoke out the window while the troll queen began to pound me with her cudgels. I beat my wings once and rose above her now hairless heads. Although the troll queen was strong, I knew that I was stronger. With the witches waiting to undo any damage I might accidentally inflict on the castle, I whipped around and hit her with my tail, knocking her through the tables and benches so that she hit the far wall with a crash. The queen staggered to her feet and shook her heads, then came after me with a roar. Hitting me with both clubs at the same time, she sent me spinning upwards so that I slammed into the ceiling. The beams cracked, the ceiling disintegrated. The witches caught the debris before it could hit anyone, while I snagged the troll queen with my claws. I tried to bite her, but she rammed her hand into my mouth and tried to pull out my tongue. I shook her like a dog does a rat, so she hit me over the head with her clubs. When I opened my jaws and dropped her onto the floor, she sat up, cursing. I landed beside her, my sides heaving as I gasped for air.
You can't have him, I said when I had the breath to speak.
The troll queen's breathing was ragged when she wiped the ashes of her singed-off hair from her unscathed scalp.
I'll not take him now, but I'll not give up. I'll come back later when you not look.
Are you sure you want him? I asked. Trying to turn Edric into a dragon would surely kill him, but there was something that I could do that might work just as well. While the queen pushed herself off the floor, I thought of the magic that Olabald Wizard had used in the battle against my father's army. His dragons had been illusions, complete except for their lack of a dragony smell. I could use something like it, but only if the troll queen wasn't as observant as I had been.
"Psst, Edric," I whispered. "Just play along."
"What are you planning?" he asked.
"You'll understand in a minute," I said,
and I whispered the spell that seemed to transform Edric. The dragon appeared so suddenly that all four of the troll queen's heads gasped. He was an orange dragon, just as Olabald's had been. And just like Olabald's pretend dragons, he was huge. When he reared back, his head nearly touched the ceiling. Even though I had made the magic and knew that he wasn't real, I was impressed.
"Go home," said Edric,
although it sounded as if the dragon were speaking.
"I'll never marry you. If you try to take me back to your cave, I'll become my true self and eat you alive."
Fat Lippia and Grunella leaned toward each other until their foreheads touched. They began to whisper, but I could still hear what they said.
"This worse than First Prince," said Grunella.
"First Prince may be a dragon too,"
Fat Lippia said.
"Maybe whole family is."
Grunella shuddered.
"And not one dragon husband. Cannot tell what to do."
"Then why marry human?" said Fat Lippia.
When she sighed, she actually sounded sad.
"Maybe marriage not for us. Being spinster not so bad. Still have one another."
The last sound I heard as the troll queen stomped from the great hall was the mournful wailing of the other three heads.